Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Andrews is a people and culture strategist. She is an executive coach, a master facilitator, keynote speaker, and the founder of Singa Leadership. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Thank you so much, George. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal lives, more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Absolutely. I'm the founder of Singa Leadership, George, and my work really centers on helping organizations build cultures that aren't just high-performing, but thriving and deeply human-centered. And that passion really stems from a belief that when people are in growth-oriented environments and that's modeled for them, they can thrive in all aspects of their life. Because work doesn't end at work. It ripples over and affects your conversation around the dinner table and your children and your communities and your health and well-being. And so I've seen firsthand how that deliberate focus on culture and leadership can really transform organizations and the people that choose to work in them. On the personal side, I've grown up in South Africa, deeply bizarre and racist country, and that shaped me in all sorts of ways that I've had to understand and try to understand and unlearn as an adult. And that's informed much of the work that we do in inclusive leadership and diversity, equity, inclusion work. And I'm a cancer survivor. I'm unfortunately a member of that club. And that has also of shaped me in many ways and the way that I support leaders in prioritizing energy management and health and well-being. I live in Vancouver, Canada, and I have a lovely, amazing partner and little boy who's soccer crazy, and all of that keeps me pretty busy and happy.
Awesome. All right. So much stuff to dig into. Building culture, growth, thriving, having to unlearn things. We're all members of certain clubs, and all those experiences shape how we're showing up at work and at home, and you're trying to make it better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I think when it comes to how those experiences have shaped work, I think I'm committed to meeting humans at work where they're at and really trying to understand the real challenges that people face today. I think the role of a leader is incredibly important, but it's increasingly complex with what people have to contend with, the pure sort of overload of information that's coming at them, grappling with the hybrid work model, trying to create inclusive workplaces, dealing with chronic stress and burnout. It's a lot. That's a lot.
That is a lot. When you put it like that, Kathy, it sounds like it's almost impossible, but I'm sure that everybody gets lots of great resources and support and training.
Yeah, it's funny. I was put into my first leadership role at 23 years old, and I'd had some intuitive sort of leadership skills through my sports as a kid. I'd played in high school, and I had a dad who was an academic and wonderful relatives that had kind of paved the way in terms of what good looks like for leaders. But when you're put into your first role and you don't have the tools, the frameworks, the scripts, it can be quite overwhelming. So I went off and I bought The 1 Minute Manager by Ken Blanchard and try to sort of get that all downloaded into my brain and apply it the next day. And that didn't go so well. I actually shifted out of that role quite deliberately and found a company that was bigger and focused on development and culture and paid attention to the leaders that were getting it right, the ones that I respected. And really what became a study of that practice, and went on to do a master's and a deep specialization into what it takes to be a good leader and support a team that is engaged and is getting results.
So what is the role of a leader, and how does one, or how does one do what you just said, get results, support people?
I love that question. And I think leadership really shifts dramatically, whether you're an individual contributor or a CEO. There's definitely things that are common at all those levels. But when you're an individual contributor, a lot of times your time horizon for planning and focus is about 1 to 3 months. You know, you're just looking at the next quarter, you're planning your activities. As you transition to a manager, that changes, and the nature of the work changes from quality to more best practice. You're looking out maybe 3 to 6 months, maybe a year. As you become director, you're looking out 1 to 2, maybe 2 to 3 years in terms of your planning time horizon. And you really have to create plans and strategies that account for that time horizon. It's more complex, more ambiguous. And then as a very senior leader, 5 to 10 years. And, you know, in some businesses, you're really thinking 10 to 20 years out at the top of the house when you're CEO. And what we see with, you know, today's sort of social media stock ticker mentality is a real drive to focus on the short term. Get after it now. What's your 90-day plan? And a lot of senior leaders, you know, really do shift into that day-to-day mode way too much. And it's like the captain of the ship in the engine room dipping down two levels to focus on that time horizon instead of looking after those longer range plans and attending to those. So the nature of leadership does really shift fundamentally depending on where you are in an organization, as do the skills and mindsets. What all leaders do well to master early is emotional intelligence and relational intelligence, because you are not a leader unless you have followers. Followers are human beings, and, you know, with all of their beauty and complexity, don't just follow blindly. You know, you've got to learn to inspire, connect, guide, course correct, and building that conversation toolbox really needs to start early. We say at Singer that, you know, communication isn't a skill, communication is the relationship.
I think that that's great and really, really hard. It's hard for me as an individual contributor to do everything I need to be doing. And then I'm tasked with becoming a manager and trying to figure all this out. And you talked about buying the book and being really proactive. And then there's other people that are depending on you, and you're part of this big organization. Is there ever a wrong time to be doing this kind of development? It strikes me that there's always a right time, but when is an organization ready?
I think an organization really does need to be thinking about culture and leadership from the get-go. And we say you don't get the culture you wish for, you get the culture you deserve. And if you're not actively attending to it every single day, it's probably one you don't like. And instead of supporting your strategies and upholding the kind of behaviors that will help people align and get behind and rally and do their best thinking at work, it'll undermine. And so if you're founding a company, if you're a team of one, to, you know, or you're leading 3,000, how you lead depends on whether you survive or thrive. And so we say get started early, even if it is picking up some good literature about leadership. Where to start can be difficult, and that's where we come in, because we cut through the clutter and we pull off off our bookshelf and our toolkit, tools that have been around tried and true for many, many years, and they just work and stick. And we guide people back towards those. It's not rocket science. We say it's not, you know, it's really not rocket science. It's common sense. The problem is that it's not common practice. And so people need reminding, and we go back to the things that work.
I love the reality that so much of what we need to know is a lot of common sense. That being said, it's really hard to bring everything together, which is why organization like Singa is there to cut through the noise. When you're implementing this, it just seems a little bit overwhelming. And mm-hmm. I would imagine if I'm trying to make a decision on who are we going to Do you think that a lot, do you think the most organizations need help in this? Do they need an outside set of eyes? Because otherwise I'm inside the jar. I've asked seven questions all wrapped into one and neither of them are clear, or none of them.
I think what you're experiencing is that where do you start with this stuff, right? It's so nebulous and it can be so overwhelming. And I think every leader is at a different stage of the journey. So it really depends. I think people moving into first line, front line leadership roles do well to find out if they've got a human resources department or people and culture department, what the company's doing in terms of development offerings for that level. And certainly if your company is not large enough to have even an HR person, then it's helpful to bring in a third party to support. If you're in that frontline position, we'd be having a chat with your management team. If you are in a larger organization, as I said, many organizations do have leveled leadership programming, and you plugging into those early is a really good idea. And, you know, if you want to take this on yourself, if you're not, you know, if you don't have the luxury of a company that's sort of backing your career development plan or supporting your transitions, then we work with leaders one-on-one as well. Just to support, you know, a quick upload of the necessary toolkit for the stage of leadership that people are at. It's different from frontline, as I said, to moving into director level roles and then into sort of enterprise. The competencies, the focus areas do shift. And then, of course, into executive roles again. But they also have people in common. And so those people skills need to be the focus your entire career, and refining them. It's not like you arrive at a destination and you've mastered what you need to in terms of people. An ongoing focus on working on your relational skills, I think, is definitely something we recommend.
Which makes so much sense. I imagine there's sort of a, like anything, a continuum of my capacity, my know-how, my skills as a leader. When I'm starting, I have none. I'm innate like you. You had a sports background, so you knew about goal setting and working together as a team and helping people and picking them up or giving them a high five or a kick in the butt, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But you probably want to think about getting to the point where people are not leaving your organization because of you. And then you get to the point where you're a master or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I mean, it does evolve. It does shift. And I did have, as you said, a sports background, so it gave me a sense of people and the importance of motivation and engagement. What it didn't give me was what to do when things went wrong. And when I had, you know, folks that were showing up and not pulling their weight, and how to have those conversations. And I think our phone rings primarily at Senga because people want to learn how to have courageous conversations. They want to manage conflict at work, handle the tough stuff. That gets us, you know, can get us in trouble if we don't handle well. And they'll call me in to support in a mediation capacity and to navigate the more tricky relationships, and also to equip their leaders to do the same, because you can be in very tricky situations, as I'm sure you know.
Easy to be a great leader when stuff's going awesome.
That's right.
I can keep this big ball rolling, but in the world of organizations and on planet Earth, a lot of it comes down to the interactions we have with the other human beings, and those do not always go really smoothly. In fact, they can be messy. So, okay, I think that makes a ton of sense. How do we handle those kinds of situations? And that really depends too. We need so many different tools in our tool belt.
Yeah, in terms of the tools and the tool belt with the difficult situations, that's where we do really bring the old tools back. And that starts with deep listening. I was listening to an episode you did a few weeks ago, talking about the importance of listening. And it's so interesting how many times that comes up and how much we need to reinforce the importance of deep listening and presence. And I think the reason it does is because it in today's world, it just is so hard. We have so much coming at us, and we're, you know, duped into thinking multitasking is possible, and it's just not. So in leadership, particularly when things get tough, that's when we bring people back to the importance of being fully present, actively listening, and then engaging in the kinds of conversations people need to get where they're going. And we've got, you know, a number of different frameworks to point people towards to help give a little mental map for those conversations and keep people in integrity throughout.
Certainly, just being, it's such a not necessarily a term that I love, just because we've sort of beaten it up, but being present and holding space for the person that you're trying to lead or that you are leading, and listening to what they're going through, the problem that they're having, and having the capacity to keep your mouth shut and ask a good question, then actually listen. But if we're not comfortable having those uncomfortable conversations, how do we get there? It's having a framework. It's having the language. Mm-hmm. And is it having the right questions? It's all these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that you said, well, if I'm not comfortable, how do I get there? And I don't know that you do. I don't know that you get comfortable having tricky conversations, because they have emotional content. And that means that our brains, our emotions are involved differently. So as you said, the frameworks can be really helpful to ground the thinking and to help you prepare in terms of the scaffolding that you need to engage and get the best outcomes. So we encourage people to think about what their ideal outcomes are ahead of time. And then what the, you know, of course, the common ground might be with the other party, and to keep that in mind. And then to have a plan if things go sideways. So what are you going to do if you get a negative reaction here, and what will your plan be? And that plan could be as simple as, I'm going to stop talking, I'm going to go into deep listening and lots of questions, and I'm going to give myself permission to put this conversation on pause and regroup at a different time. But always with that end goal in mind of communicating a message, agreeing to an action plan, of changed behavior, refocusing around a particular work goal or a way of achieving that work goal that is clear to both parties, and you walk away with that plan. And it's that prep up front to know that, look, you know, emotions are going to get involved, nervous systems are going to be involved here, and we've got to stay grounded.
I can remember some of the first times that I had to have tough conversations with people that I was leading, and, you know, my palms would start sweating, my heart rate would absolutely just be pounding out of my chest. And I don't know that I had a framework or got a lot of coaching on how to do that. Mm-hmm. But today I'm much more comfortable doing it. And so, but just understanding what you just laid out, this is the outcome or the goal that I'm trying to get, or I this is where I want the conversation to go. And mm-hmm. here are some of the steps and what we need to do. And that then prepares you to have a good conversation and to try to leave with clarity on both parties and a plan for moving forward. Mm-hmm. Do you encourage that people practice those kinds of conversations and like role play?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm glad that you are more comfortable these days. And I suspect it's because you've got the hours behind you. You've been in this situation, and I suspect you've made some mistakes and you've got some right. And
for sure.
Yeah. So it definitely is experience. And I think when you're at the beginning of the career and you just haven't been in those situations, it can be overwhelming to think about, because you don't have those hard yards behind you yet. And that's where the frameworks are particularly helpful. It's okay, if I'm in these situations, here's a bit of a mental map that's going to help me. One of those actually that I think is really powerful comes from the work of David Rock, and I'm not sure if you've read his book. It's called The Brain at Work. He's got many books, but he's a phenomenal thought leader. And he talks a little bit about social needs and what we all have in common. And he breaks those down into five kind of core social needs that need to be attended to when we're in these conversations. And the model is called SCARF, and the S stands for status. We all have a sense of status that needs to be sort of honored and protected. That can be our title. It can be as simple as a human being making eye contact with us. It could be acknowledgement of a contribution in a meeting. And if our status has not been acknowledged by the other party, then it can, you know, be a slight to us, and it can kick in our fight or flight reaction and our threat response. Similarly, the second part of that is R. It's C is certainty. We want a sense of certainty and predictability in our environment. And when that's, you know, not in front of us, then it can be really scary. And so entering in a conversation, a performance conversation, for example, is leader's role is to give a sense of certainty. You know, we're here today to talk about the last 3 months, particularly Project X, where I saw some real wins and I saw some opportunities for learning. We're going to talk about that, and then we're going to talk about the next steps. You know, that gives the container for the conversation. The other person's nervous system can calm down. Look, I know why I'm here. I know where I'm going. The A stands for autonomy. We do want a sense of control and a way to navigate our work environment and the decisions that affect us with some agency. And so leaders do well to give people as much autonomy as they can once they've gauged, you know, the competence and character of the human they're delegating to. The R is around relatedness. We want to have a sense of connection and relationship at work and with our leader and with our peers. And so that's why relationships, connection, not belonging is so very important to us. And then the last, the F, which is really powerful, is about fairness. We're hypersensitive to fairness. And when we perceive unfair treatment, like my leader is treating Bob different than Jane, we're on high alert. And so when we're in these courageous conversations, our brain is scanning for threats 5 times a second. And if, as a leader, we're not aware of attending to them, then we could be stepping into zones that trigger other people without even realizing it. So understanding some of those dynamics has really helped me coach leaders and our team work with leaders to understand how to keep people in a reward state so that they don't leave the building mentally and they stay in the conversation with you and can listen and absorb what you're saying.
I think that is a really powerful and helpful framework. I was just visualizing in my head, sitting across a table from somebody and making sure and thinking that I would go through those 5 different points and helping people to be more comfortable, regardless of whether or not, for lack of a better term, they're in trouble or whatever it is that we're here to talk about. We're laying it out. This is what we're going to be talking about and making sure that you're honoring and making people feel comfortable and part of the organization and just all the things. I think that is extremely helpful and that gives people a path to run on. Otherwise, it's ambiguous and I'm going to forget to say something and the other person's not going to have a rewarding experience either.
That's right. Exactly. And often those interactions, the performance reviews, they are emotionally charged. So we do well to prep for them and just have those little cues on our desk or as we're prepping. So we get the outcomes that we're looking for.
Yeah.
Because when we don't, we waste a tremendous amount of time and emotional energy, and that, you know, that tanks our productivity and dinner table conversations.
Right. Yeah. It's bad for everyone involved.
Yeah.
The leader, the person who's being led, and the organization and families and everybody else. So to be able to effectively have these conversations and move past issues, and that can mean that you're with the organization or you're not, but we have moved past it and found resolution.
That's right. Yeah. I was in a really wonderful conversation yesterday with somebody I really respect, a thought leader in conflict resolution. And she said, Kathy, you know, facts don't solve fights. And I think it touches on some of the themes of the SCARF model. Like, we really got to understand what's beneath the emotion and what's driving people and what's the sort of treasure they're protecting, because purely fact-based conversation is just not going to unlock some of the stuff that is more charged for people. And that's where some of the other skills, the deep listening, really, really become essential. And, you know, a lot of leaders that we work with, they rely heavily on their HR department or their people and culture department to help navigate these difficult conversations. But you really can't delegate the interpersonal stuff. So every leader at every level does need to start to pay attention to these dynamics if they want to be successful long term and if they want their teams to be healthy and thrive.
Well said. Well, Kathy, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our website has a button where you can set up a chemistry check call with us for coaching or training and development. And we have a podcast launching in the fall. So if people sign up for our mailing list, they'll get our newsletter and they'll also get notified about our podcast launching in the fall. And so we'd love to hear from you. And the easiest way is to go to www.singerleadership.com. And we're also very active on LinkedIn, so you can join there as well.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this much as I did, show Kathy your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to singaleadership.com. It's C-I-N-G-A leadership.com. Click on the button that says chemistry check and have a quick call with Kathy to see if there's an opportunity for you to improve your leadership skills and have better outcomes and all that good stuff. You can find them on LinkedIn as well. And then keep an eye out for the podcast, which is launching this coming fall. Thanks again, Kathy.
Thanks for having me, George.
Until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.